Good morning, everybody. It's welcome to the newest Patreon episode of Grey Malkin Lane. We're recording this early on a Sunday morning, and my voice is just starting to work. I'm so happy to be joined by my friend Christian Smith. Hi, Christian. How are you this morning?
I'm great. It's sunny. It's warm. It's unseasonably British here. So yeah, it's great.
Delicious. It is late, or no, goodness, early September. We'll release this in late September. It's a nice day here in Salt Lake City. I just took the dog out for a walk. Like, no complaints.
That's good.
Christian came on my show for the wrap-up on Hidden Years a little while back. We got a lovely chance to connect. We've been interacting online for a long time. Yeah. And we've been talking about doing this particular episode, Patreon, on the character D-Man for quite a while. I'm so happy to finally be recording this with you. We'll talk about D-Man in just a minute, Christian, but I would love for you to share with listeners a little bit of your origin story, if you are willing.
Yeah, of course. So, as you can guess from the accent, I'm from the UK, from London. And like most British kids, I grew up reading the Beano and the Dandy and all of those very, very, very British comics. And then around early 81, 82, started to get into superheroes, and Secret Wars hit. And in the UK, we didn't get the monthlies. We got weeklies. So they took Secret Wars, the original 12 issues, and broke them up into weekly parts. And yeah, and it really messed with the pacing. And it spread it over, I think, like 35 issues or so. So we were getting like half an issue every week, and then a backup story. And I think it was like Alpha Flight and the original Iceman miniseries, which was a trip, and all sorts of weird stuff. And then it went into Secret Wars 2 and all the spin-offs and everything. And I got into the X-Men and the New Mutants through Secret Wars 2. So the first time I met the X-Men, it was Rachel and Ileana and Kate, Kitty, and all of that team. And I didn't know about Jean. So I met the Dark Phoenix through Rachel's memories.
Oh, wow.
I bonded hard with Rachel. I met the New Mutants in the issue they died. Yeah, issue 36 and 37, they died right in front of me. And it's like, oh, so I won't worry about those kids then. And yeah, just sort of went from there. And then bit by bit sort of decided what parts of the universe I liked. So, you know, that we had the Fantastic Four, so, you know, She-Hulk, and yeah, that's the team I liked, and the Avengers when Jan was leading, so that's the team I liked, and Monica and all of that. But it was the X-Men that I always came to, and yeah, just from there, that was it. I sort of fell headfirst into it, abandoned DC completely, because at that point, you know, Batman, Superman and all that was the big thing. Abandoned them completely. Until Justice League International, because, you know, who couldn't not like that? And yeah, that was it. My first actual proper issue of X-Men that I ever bought that was the American format was 206, which was Freedom is a Four-Letter Word, which was in San Francisco and Freedom Force and Spider-Woman and Bizarreness. And it was
such, it's such a great era of comics. I love that era.
And then we went into Australia, and that was it. I was hooked.
I'm always fascinated by how people enter the franchise. And so I started with early X-Force, which you know, the teenage rebellion kind of, and then delving into the X-Men right around the blue and gold era, and then starting to pick up the back issues. You just kind of find what you find. The Executioner's Song, I remember, what the hell? Because that happened like right when I was reading. So yeah. it's really crazy to delve in. And then to revisiting all this as an adult and like learning how to apply like a literary lens, you start to realize the brilliance of the storytelling.
Absolutely.
Silver Age, has this been a new journey for you with Grey Malkin Lane, or have you read the Silver Age
before? I mean, I'd read sort of like the black and white, was it Essentials they did? The big phone book size ones.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were great, but it was not something that I really read a huge amount. I had, the UK is very much hardback Christmas annuals. It's a very weird thing. I've got one sitting right under here. Let me find it. There it is. So every Christmas you'd get a hardback
annual. Okay, yeah, I've seen these before.
Yeah, and So there was one that was an X-Men one that had all of the Polaris and the Living Monolith stories, the Neil Adams stuff,
Yeah, which is the good stuff.
which is the good stuff. And it had some weird coloring printing issues. So Polaris was suddenly like a redhead when she shouldn't have been wearing the wig. And it was very odd. But yeah, so I love that little bit, but the really early stuff, yeah, it just wasn't something I grabbed onto. I think it was, the later Claremont stuff with the weird sexual connotations, and yeah, and really, I didn't like the original five until basically Sorensen was writing them, and when it was getting into X Factor and Inferno and all of that, I really wasn't a fan of them until then, really.
It's been such a journey on this show, and I know you've been along for a lot of the ride with me. Thank
Yeah.
you for your support and friendship. I'm getting ready to transition. We're going to release this episode at the end of September on the Patreon. In October, we're doing an entire month of Magneto on both the Patreon and the main show.
Wow.
What I'm realizing, and I've just started recording these episodes, man, you can't delve into Magneto without getting into a lot of really heavy trauma stuff. I will pre-announce this. The next episode out on the main show right after this one, in place of the monthly trial in September, is going to be a focused episode about Candy Southern, in which we have a group of people reviewing a smut novel. And it's very like pornographic and lots of laughing. And then the next episode right after that is Magneto Testament. Which is such a tone shift.
Yeah, wow. One extreme to the other.
Then we get to land in November, starting with like the early 70s stuff, which I'll be in for a while because there's a lot of content before Giant Size.
I was going to say, I hadn't realized how much like the characters were in lots of other stuff, even when they weren't being published.
It's really fun. I love to make a list and to check items off a list. So when and the talent that comes in for this stuff, there's a three-part Magneto story in Fantastic Four, which we touched on in
Yeah.
our Hidden Years review. Like the I so I just I booked those three episodes for November, and the talent coming in is amazing. We get to
Brilliant.
start early January with the Beast turning blue and Amazing Adventures. Like
Wow.
there's a lot of stuff. I'm really genuinely excited, and it's going to be fun after the 3 months of the Hidden Years, which was so long. I'm really excited after that and the trauma of Magneto to get lost in like the camp of the early 70s. It's going to be
Yeah.
really delightful.
That sounds brilliant.
Today we're going to talk about D-Man, who is a character that you and I were going back and forth on which character to do. And I'm going to hear your history with D-Man in a minute, but I thought, does this character fit? And there's
No.
two reasons. Well, there's two reasons he does, because
Oh.
the point of this Patreon is to cover supporting characters and obscure characters. D-Man is number one, a queer icon, which we'll talk about. And number two, in his most recent appearances, he has taken on the role of the guidance counselor for the mutant support group, Supertrans, which officially makes him, he's in kind of a Stevie Hunter kind of category with the X-Men now, in that he is has allied himself to the mutant cause, and he is friends with like Jubilee, and he's hanging out with not only that, but he did have a Wolverine-like costume at one point. I had literally written the encyclopedia on this guy years ago. He's a character I've always been fond of because I love Mark Gruenwald's Captain America run. And I don't know why I liked him, except that he just felt fun. Revisiting him, it was weird to me to see how much of his history is so discordant. He gets tossed aside and then brought back in weird ways over and over. He has a lot of trauma, man.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me your connection to the character D-Man. Why was this character particularly appealing to you?
Okay, I mean, the honest part is you're a big, hairy, bearded dude. I mean, always a good thing.
Said the big hairy bearded dude.
Absolutely. Now, I similar to you is that I kind of came across him in the Grimwald stuff, but I didn't realize I had. And I kind of assumed, because I started reading Captain America at the time, just picking it off the newsstand back when John Walker had just taken over. So we'll talk
That's
about
a
that a bit
fun
later.
era of comics,
Yeah.
man.
And
I always love
he
Cap. I always love the Captain America stuff most when Cap's like questioning the government and like what it means to be American. And John Walker as like the ultimate soldier. Anyway, this is where we could get lost in the weeds. And I
Exactly.
love Captain America. I really do.
Captain America for me is a lot more interesting when it's not Steve in the costume. But I kind of read it at the time, and D-Man's quite heavily involved in the Steve side of the story at that point. And I kind of assumed he'd been really heavily built up at that point, and he was like this big character. And then looking back today, you know, for tonight, today, I realized how little he's actually in. And then, like you say, he disappears for almost decades at a time, comes back used, and then just abandoned, comes back, and he's different. And every time he's sort of picked up by someone who seems to love the character and does something new and different with him, and then nobody ever picks up on it.
So listeners, if you ever want to do a Patreon with me, Christian's discovering the reason I do this Patreon more than anything, there's something so fun about picking up back issues and examining the story from the character, like the perspective of one character. Mm. When you stack up D-Man's history, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
When did you become aware that D-Man had come out, or when did you know he was gay?
I think it was the Lockjaw series.
Okay. And, you read Kibble Smith's Lockjaw, which I did get to talk to Daniel about.
And I've listened to that, and that was great. And I think that was kind of the first time I ever really noticed him as, like, say, the queer icon thing. And that made me go back and sort of say, well, what have I missed here? And then sort of suddenly found quite how much I had missed because, you know, Scourge.
But if you read his whole history with the perspective of him being gay,
it's really obvious.
It's really apparent more than it is with Bobby. And it's mm-hmm. real apparent with Bobby too.
Yeah. Oh, but literally his first appearances in Captain America is like, oh yeah.
So let's talk about D-Man. There's several sections of his history. I'm going to cover kind of section by section, and then we'll talk about it. We'll just see how things go.
Yeah.
He first shows up in the Thing series in the mid-1980s. The Thing had his own series, and a lot of it was about the Thing being a costumed wrestler. He's joined a group called the Unlimited Class Wrestling Foundation, or the UCWF, which is super strong wrestlers. And wrestling was huge in the mid to late 80s. We're talking like Saturday morning cartoons here in America, at least. You'd wake up and you'd watch like your favorite programs. They were on every 30 minutes, new episodes every week. And one of the programs would always be like wrestling and toward the later part of the hour. Like it was a big deal. The action figures sold of wrestlers. Marvel's capitalizing that a little bit. And in Thing 33 through 36, Mike Carlin's writing. I just got to have Mike on the show. Amazing guy. Oh, that was the same episode you were on, actually.
Yeah.
It was Concordant Interviews. Mike Carlin and Ron Wilson have given us like an epic Battle of the Sexes era of the wrestling. Have you seen the show Glow on Netflix?
Yeah.
It's the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. So Marvel does that, but they call them the Grapplers. And there's these lady wrestlers with names like Battle Axe and Butterball. Magilla, Va-Va-Voom, Screaming Mimi, who goes on to become Songbird of the Thunderbolts, Pound Cakes, Titania, Letha, Cowgirl, Sushi, Gold Digger, and their manager is Anti-Freeze, not to be confused with the stuff you put in your car engine. And Dennis Dunphy is the real name of D-Man, which is short for Demolition Man, because in order to be a costumed wrestler, you have to have like a name like The Undertaker. There has to be a gimmick and a costume. Wrestlers are superheroes, but like dramatized for mm-hmm. kids who then buy their action figures, right? So D-Man is one of the guy wrestlers. There's a whole bunch of really obscure guy wrestlers that we're not going to take time to list because they're less fun than the Grapplers.
Yep.
He's tall, he's super muscular, he's wearing booty shorts and like the tightest black shirt, and he has a red mohawk. He goes by Demolition Dunphy or Demolition Man, which is also shortened to D-Man, and he's buddies with the Thing. And there's a series of kind of silly adventures, but mostly he's just the nice guy that hangs out with the Thing during this series. Before I continue, let me hear some of your thoughts on the first encounters with D-Man.
He kind of just drops into it almost fully formed. He's just there as a character. And I mean, that mohawk is just amazing. So it's not just a mohawk, it's a mohawk. I mean, this puts like Aurora to shame at times. And it never moves, that's it. And yeah, I mean, the whole Grapplers thing, I mean, you know, I'd forgotten that, like, Screaming Mimi was there, and obviously, you know, I love Songbird. But, yeah, it was just, he just kind of, like you say, he's the nice guy, and suddenly he just falls into this role of being the Thing's, but he falls into the role of being the best buddy all the time. And that's where I think he just seems to grow. And just he's kind of the Nightwing in places. He knows everyone, and he's kind of nice and pleasant, and everyone has respect for him.
He's the overly enthusiastic nice guy that's part of Emma Frost would fucking hate this guy. Like she would, she would pick her teeth with him. She would hate him so much. Mm-hmm. But he's very earnest. Yeah. He's like a super nerd in a way that like Kamala Khan is. Like there's a part of like her that's just very friendly and kind, and you love her for it. And that's D-Man all the way through. Well, yeah, not all the way through. There's, we'll get to Scourge. So there's a series of silly adventures in Thing. Thing always has because he's dating Alicia Masters, whose dad is the Puppet Master. Puppet Master is getting a trial on my show, by the way. In October, it's gonna be fun. I'm pairing him with Brainchild, which is a wild combination
from the Savage Land. Oh,
yeah, okay. It really fits. It's fun. You'll see. Okay. if you're a fan of the Grey Balkan Trials, this is a wild one.
Okay.
So there's the time Puppet Master controlled D-Man and made him fight the Thing. Then the Thing starts to notice that D-Man and other wrestlers are taking pills, and Duffy calls them nerve pills. He says because photo shoots make him nervous, but then the Thing learns about a guy named the Power Broker, and you start to learn that Power Broker is this evil guy who is basically a drug dealer. He's amping people up and making them superpowered, but then also making them take pills to keep the powers under control or to stop them from like turning into crazy monsters. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but Dunphy is one of these superpowered guys. That's where all these wrestlers are coming from. They're connected to like a drug enhancement organization, which is like a superhero commentary on hormones, basically. But D-Man like quits cold turkey. He's like sweating in the hospital while the Thing goes after the Power Broker. That's kind of his story through the Thing. He's like the guy that makes it out, because a lot of these wrestlers end up turning into crazy monsters. Do you have any
and I think this is the first time he dies. Doesn't he have the heart attack at this point as well?
There's him in the hospital really struggling, and we start to see a heart condition develop as a result of these pills, which is again, we got the earnest guy who has like the very serious story on the side.
And I like the fact that, you know, he was getting the powers, but you know, there was a downside to it, and the Power Broker was actually a lot more interesting than I thought he was gonna be. I was expecting mustache twirling, you know, wahaha, but actually it was quite an interesting story behind it, and the fact that Dennis kind of got pulled into it and dragged along was almost against his best interests.
I mean, we basically get his origin story. He had like a normal, he played college football, but then he didn't make it into the pros. So he went to the Power Broker.
Yeah.
And the Power Broker is a guy named Curtis Jackson. He's kind of a obscure Marvel guy. Curtis with two S's, which is funny. Curtis. And he's like a Wall Street kind of guy who is like weaponizing drugs. I mean, that's kind of his story.
It's a very 80s story.
There's a new version of the Power Broker who's more obscure, but he recently fought Rogan Gambit in their most recent limited series by Stephanie Williams. So there's a fun connection to X-Men as well. Okay, so then Thing gets canceled, and Mark Gruenwald likes this character, so he pulls him into his Captain America run, which is fun. Mark loves to tie up old continuity in his Cap stuff, so he'll make it into like a multi-issue arc. He'll bring in lots of themes. D-Man is there, and then this is the run that like cements D-Man into people. So like people in Mark Gruenwald's D-Man's held in the same esteem as like Diamondback, who's running around here. Like there's characters that Cap associates with through this time that you just fucking love.
Yeah.
Issue 328, Cap seeks out D-Man. He's literally bench pressing a literal ton. And Cap enters the gym, and there are other wrestlers that kind of briefly fight him. But D-Man's like, hey, this is Captain America. Let's be buddies. And then they strip down and hit the showers together and like have a buddy bonding moment while he's showering naked with Captain America. So let's begin here.
It's one of those things that you look back on it now and think, wow, how did we not realize until like literally 10 years ago that this guy was gay?
Hey, Captain America, let's be friends. Let's go shower together.
Let's go shower, and I'll tell you my origin story. Oh, and here's my towel. Here's my spare towel. Oh, why don't we shower a bit more together? So, wow, you really... It's pretty obvious when you read it again. He's desperately in love with Cap throughout this entire run.
Yeah. It goes on for like a couple pages, and
Yeah.
D-Man is desperate to have Cap like him. He wants to prove himself as a hero. He's like, call me Demo, I'll be your buddy, and like, let me just latch myself to you. And Cap, it takes Cap a while to like kind of like D-Man back, but there's very much a hero worship thing, and it's very 80s. It's very, very 80s, this whole thing.
It's that reluctant sidekick thing, isn't it? You know, the big hero didn't want the sidekick, but he comes along, and you know, it's almost the Jubilee thing, is he's just there annoying him until he's actually proving useful, and suddenly he's really useful and he just hangs around, and hangs around for ages.
Yeah, Cap is looking for the power broker, which is why he seeks D-Man out. And D-Man's like, hey, let me shave my head, I'm gonna get a costume, I'm gonna be your new sidekick. And Cap's like,
the costume
for a new sidekick. But D-Man already has a costume ready, so he's been thinking about like this life of heroism. And it's a yellow and black costume with a red belt and a red D on the chest. And he based it on the original Daredevil uniform, but it also kind of looks like Wolverine's costume in some weird ways.
The cowl on it is basically Wolverine, just with slightly shorter bits.
The cowl with like the little protruding eyes bit that makes it look like Wolverine a few times, and some people even call him on it. So I think
there's a cover, like, you know, in the 340s of Captain America, where it's basically just, is it Wolverine? Is it Daredevil? No, it's D-Man. Ugh. And it's just, well, that's on the cover, and I honestly think the costume is the bit that's held this guy back from being like a nomad or a Winter Soldier kind of level character, because you look at that costume and think, what the hell is this guy? He's wearing Daredevil and Wolverine. And
well, and the interesting thing, and we'll see him, but he becomes a joke at Marvel for years. He's the worst hero. Not only that, but he's a homeless, stinky hero. We'll get there in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And that's the space he occupies for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious to me that he puts a giant D on his chest. Like, this guy loves the D.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just, and it's not even a subtle costume. I mean, it's yellow, not just, yeah, it's, yeah.
It's objectively bad. It's a bad costume. His original wrestler look, all in the red with the belt, like, is much better with the mohawk. This is, he gets stuck in this thing for a long time.
And even when they try to get him out of it, I mean, the most recent thing, he's kind of got out of it and then goes back to it, even in the Pride issue. It's just, oh, come on. You've got some decent costumes, finally.
You gotta revisit the classics sometimes.
Well, yeah,
but he loves sometimes... his t-shirt. He's a walking advertisement. He is looking for D at all times. okay, so they end up, this is where the heart attack happens. So he was in the hospital before. They end up fighting the power broker, who captures D-Man and boosts him full of adrenaline and makes him fight Cap. But then D-Man has a heart attack. And as he's dying, he thinks he's dying. He's like, Cap, I was a good buddy, right? Like, I was a good partner to you, right?
You loved me, didn't you? Please tell me you loved me.
Cap ends up saving D-Man's life. He puts him in charge of a hotline. This is a very late 80s, early 90s. There was a period of time Grunwald needed Cap to be able to have different adventures. And he had a literal 1-800 number where people would call in and be like, Captain America, I live in Wisconsin and there's a monster attacking my family. Please help me. So it was a lot of fun, but it kind of gets relegated to the background. Anyway, D-Man's in charge of the hotline for a while. There's a time when Cap goes missing and D-Man ends up like buddying up with Falcon and Red Wing. But also Nomad and Vagabond. And D-Man and Nomad.
What the hell is Vagabond about? Vagabond is a different thing, because I'd forgotten about her until I read these issues again. It's like, oh, I remember her. But the other thing that I didn't realize so much, and they keep just like throwing in, is he's basically funding Captain America at this point, because he's made millions in the wrestling.
Yeah, he's keeping the hotline going.
He's basically keeping everything going and funding Captain America and everything else. And it's just like, oh, wow, you actually were quite important at this point. But yeah, between him and... It's Nomad, isn't it? Yeah. Is this Rick?
Nomad, no. Nomad is... Okay, here's a quick Captain America deep dive. If you go back to the Golden Age of comics, Captain America and Bucky are the two characters that we love now as Steve Rogers and Winter Soldier, right? Yeah. In Avengers, when Cap comes back, they tell this story about how Cap died in this plane accident but ended up getting frozen in an iceberg, and Bucky was dead for a long time, but it turns out he was also a Russian agent who was the Winter Soldier, right? But there were other versions of Captain America that came out canonically after that. One of them is the character, like the Spirit of 76. Another is the character, the Patriot. In the 50s, Marvel tried to revive Cap and Bucky, and they made them like anti-commie agents who were like kind of racist and awful. And so later writers, and this is a whole Cap thing in like his series, later writers retconned that these were two characters named William Burnside, if I'm getting my name right, and Jack Monroe,
Jack Monroe, that's it.
who had been like driven a little bit mad, and they are obscure versions of Cap and Bucky that get used in the comics from time to time, but they're like the anti-commie 50s Cap and Bucky. So Nomad in this era is Jack Monroe, who is he's just this really bitter, awful guy. Now, this is the same guy that Fabian Nicieza would turn into the Nomad series in the 90s, which has
And
a
I
lot.
remember reading part of that with the baby and the, yeah.
He has the baby on his chest. But also, this guy becomes Scourge in Fabian Nicieza's Thunderbolts. So
Thunderbolts.
D-Man and Nomad both become Scourge later. Do you want to tell us about Vagabond? This is Priscilla Lyons.
I don't know. I really don't know where this girl came from
She's
and where she ended up.
worthless.
And she's just sprawled all over Nomad, and then she just decides she wants Dennis, and she doesn't care who knows.
I don't know if she wants Dennis at
Or she wants the
all.
attention of going for Dennis that
Yeah,
Jack's going to give her.
Dennis is like her like gay best friend. So Priscilla Lyons shows up in Captain America 325, and then she becomes Vagabond in Cap 336. She literally has no superpowers. She's just like an 80s chick wearing like an aerobics uniform.
It's a
And she's
great
like
costume.
buddying up with Nomad, and they're like fighting crime very ineffectively. She's kind of a vapid woo girl, like that you'd see hanging out in the gay club.
I remember her hanging out with Boom Boom there.
She's an ultimate like fag hag. She could hang out with like Boom Boom and the Blonde Phantom. Like
Exactly.
there's nothing about this character. Weirdly, she also becomes Scourge in the US Agent series. We're not gonna talk about it.
Okay.
She's a terrible character. But Nomad's
Wow.
not giving her attention and she wants to be trained as a crime fighter. So D-Man starts giving her, like, hey, let me teach you. And there's a bunch of scenes where Nomad keeps walking in on D-Man and like Vagabond wrestling. And D-Man's like, look, I'm in love with Cap. I don't care about and Nomad's like very much the straight guy, like, dude, fuck you. I'm gonna fuck you up if you keep like flirting with my girlfriend. And there's a lot of weird
He
tension here.
absolutely hates him. I mean, just, I mean, every issue he calls him, Nomad calls D-Man something really obnoxious, you know, and it's just like, dude, just calm down. You're not
If you had the
that much of a dick.
experience, I was the gay kid in high school that just I genuinely couldn't comprehend it when people didn't like me. I'm like, I'm a nice guy. There is no reason for you to hate me, but they hated me because I was queer or because I was friends with their girlfriends. And that's the vibe that's in
And
here.
that's it. I mean, you throw the gay side onto it now, and actually it makes a lot more sense because, yeah, Nomad is definitely the sort of character at this sort of time who would be very, very homophobic and freaked out by the fact that this guy is in the van with them and running around and you know, obsessing over Cap. And
But
when
one of those
he
many funny things of the writers clearly were not intending to write D-Man as gay, but
absolutely.
there's so much. It's the gay shower scene, it's the Nomad hatred. Like there's a lot of subtext.
And then they go over a cliff.
Yes, literally. But first, they fight Famine, the like horseman of apocalypse, in a surprise appearance. Autumn Rolfson in like the big golden horse. She's been sent by Apocalypse to devastate America's farmlands. Were you surprised by this appearance of Famine?
I remembered the reading the issue at the time, and I think I must have it in the omnibus in the other room, but I'd forgotten that D-Man and everyone was in it as well. I just kind of remembered it being a Captain America story. So seeing it, and oh, Fall of the Mutants. Oh, cool. Okay. There's actually an X-Men link here. I don't feel quite so bad anymore.
I love surprise appearances, especially by obscure villains. It makes me happy.
And famine was really quite effective in this story as well.
Yeah, she's pretty scary. It's my favorite famine appearance. Not a lot, but the listeners, I will promise to do a famine Patreon one day. I actually love her. She's great. So I'm going to cover some few things. D-Man has already had a heart attack. He's been in over his head, and this is a recurring theme for this guy. He keeps getting hurt. They respond to like a breakout from the vault, and there's a bunch of super powered criminals. Titania, who's like the super strong She-Hulk villain, who was recently played by Jamila Jamil in the She-Hulk series, just fucking like D-Man goes
she annihilates him.
She like destroys his bike, throws him over a cliff, and he's like, oh my god, all I wanted was to help Cap fight crime. This is awful. And like, he almost dies.
and he's like saved by Falcon, and you know, but he has quite a big sort of, oh my god, what the hell am I doing with my life? As he's plummeting over this cliff, he's like, maybe this wasn't the best life choice that I've ever made.
He also fights the Griffin. Griffin is a villain we'll see in January on my show, because he debuts when he fights the Blueford Beast. I'll have more to say on Griffin another time too. D-Man is there's more shit with Nomad. There's a lot of infighting. They fight the Serpent Society. He's like determined to like overcome, like, Titania kicked my ass, so I've gotta really show up. There's a lot of bullying from Nomad, and then they shoot, like, they end up fighting Viper, who's really scary. This is very preemptive as well. Viper, or Madam Hydra, is getting the trial on my show in January. Ooh, so I'm in the middle of my research on her. She is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
he gets bit and poisoned and like nearly dies again, but then Battlestar saves him. I love Battlestar. Battlestar is Lamar Hoskins, who's like the black Captain America archetype. Are you a Battlestar fan?
I actually really was at the time, guy, because I sort of started reading Captain America really heavily when him and John were essentially the co-leads of the book, and really kind of enjoyed his character. And then obviously, you know, he disappears for a while.
Then he's in Silver Sable with my friend Gregory Wright.
Exactly. And then he comes back, and then he's been back in a few other things recently as well. And yeah, I really like him. I think they could do so much with him, because, you know, he kind of was, again, he's almost the anti D-Man, in that he was there for the right reasons and just got dragged along into the wrong things. And there was no, you know, there was no maliciousness in his character. And later, you know, later on, we actually see that as well. When he's fighting,
he's another Grunwald character. He initially partners with US Agent, and he also gets his powers from the Power Broker. But he's gone on to have a really fun history. He's another character from the 80s I really genuinely love.
Yeah.
And he's got some really interesting stuff. We talked about, he was originally called Bucky, which is like a racial slur for black people in America. Anyway, we've talked about this on my show before. McDuffie had to point out to Grunwald, like, that's actually not okay. So they worked it into the story.
Honestly, Battlestar's a much better name, because it means he can go off and do things on his own.
Which is, like, again, very like 80s wrestler name, though, still. Anyway, they fight the Serpent Society. The heroes end up arrested, and they're in jail. And Sidewinder, who's the Serpent Society leader, teleports in and offers to, like, free them. And D-Man's like, no, I must be a hero and face justice. And Nomad's like, I'm fucking going.
Diamondback's also, we're gone.
Vagabond decides to stay behind in jail with D-Man. And Nomad's like, it's over then, babe. If you're choosing that homo like over me, we're done. And then he goes on to have a terrible history after that. Dunphy's eventually let go. And then he kind of hangs around on Avengers Island for a while. And then Cap's back, and he's like, hey, you want to be an Avenger? And D-Man's like, yeah, sure. And it kind of happens off-panel.
Yeah.
They fight Flag Smasher and Ultimatum, who is a group of anarchists and, like, nihilists. Ultimatum is an acronym. It's my favorite Marvel acronym. It stands for Underground Liberated, Totally Integrated, Mobile Army to Unite Mankind. Ultimatum.
Just wow, that outdoes S.H.I.E.L.D. any day. I love that one. Yep. Okay.
D-Man's on a ship, and it explodes, and everyone's like, oh no, he's dead. But it turns out he's been frozen in a block of ice, Captain America style, and gets preserved by an Inuit tribe. But when he's thawed out, He has amnesia and brain damage,
Okay,
and
so
he lives in an igloo, and they call him Red Hair. I'm covering a lot of shit really fast.
what, okay, so that thought out story, where the hell was that? Because I couldn't find it.
I'll find it for you just to be safe. Give me just a moment. The context here is really interesting because again, it's the really nice guy who gets totally just shit on. The
Yeah.
brain damage thing. This is in Captain America 384, and then it's
Okay, so
followed
I
up
missed that
on in
one.
Cap 400 Part 2, the second
Right.
story in
Yeah,
Captain
because
America.
384 is the one with the weird Jack Frost character, isn't it?
Yeah,
So,
Oh,
yeah.
I love that you
But,
came up with that off the top of
oh,
your head.
well, no, I read it again last night because I'm thinking, did I miss the fact that he thaws out in there? He doesn't thaw out in that issue. He's
Yeah,
still left at the end, and it's just like,
that's
I
where it
don't.
reveals he's alive.
Yeah.
So it's like, ooh, Gruenwald's bringing him back, you know?
And then he doesn't
Yeah,
for
and
like
then
a
he
year
does.
and a half. And
They
then he.
also this is also where characters start commenting on his body odor because he's like living in an igloo, is still wearing his D-Man suit. He's grown a beard. He does look good with a beard though.
Yeah, until Jarvis and, oh, what's her name? Bernie Rosenthal.
I love Bernie Rosenthal.
I love Bernie Rosenthal until she loses a 6-foot-6 man in the bloody park.
She's
I
one of
mean,
my all-time favorite. Like, I love Bernie Rosenthal like I love Vera Cantor. And again, this isn't a cat podcast, so we probably won't get there, but I love her.
love the fact that, Jarvis says, oh, we found him, and Cap's, oh, hugs, 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 and all of this. And then they take him for a walk,
Oh,
and we
wait,
lose the bear.
you're jumping ahead. One moment.
Sorry, go.
Okay, just to recap. Football player, super strong wrestler, addict, wannabe hero, sidekick of Captain America, heart attack, Avenger for half a second, brain damage. Okay, we ready to keep going?
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Cap 401 is where D-Man is reunited with Cap, but he's like super stinky and catatonic and mute. And the doctors are checking on him, and he's like thick and he has the hairiest chest here. He looks real good, but also brain damaged.
Yeah.
And then this is where Christian's talking about. Edmund Jarvis takes him out on an outing, and then Bernie Rosenthal's there, but they kind of just run away. Her purse gets stolen and she
That's
like
right,
runs
yeah.
after them, and they just leave this guy in the park by himself, kind of wandering around.
And spend the next 3 issues just asking random people, have you seen a 6-foot-6 redhead just
And
in the park?
this is funny to me, but also telling. So, oh God, we can't get lost in the weeds here. Adam Warlock is the messianic character. There's an evil version of Warlock called the Magus, who has used powers to create an evil demonic version of every Marvel prominent hero. And D-Man gets one, which shows
Called
he's achieved a
Demon.
certain level of status. So an evil version of himself, which is just, it's his straight side coming to attack him in the park, literally drowns him in Central Park. And then he lands in an underground civilization of old Captain America villains that Grunwald's bringing back. These are the Night People of Zero Town. And they're basically like a society of homeless people who also have superpowers. It's kind of a Morlock thing.
Yeah.
And they live under the ground, and D-Man like overthrows their leader and learns how to talk again. And now he's the hero of Zero Town. I'm covering a lot of shit
Oh
fast.
yeah.
It's just not super relevant. What are your thoughts on this story?
I mean, I hadn't realized because this is all this happens while the Catwolf story is happening, Infinity War is happening, and suddenly D-Man, I mean, I'm assuming that basically Catatonic and Mute and everything, he basically stumbled into the Ramble and just went cruising. And that's where he was getting attacked by the straight man. Not saying it, this, but yeah, that's what's happening.
Evil D-Man is like an inverted costume. He's like black on yellow instead of... He looks better than D-Man does.
So, Zero Town. I've never come across this before. This was the first, you know, these were the first time I've seen it. Is this the first time it was ever used?
No. It's okay. From like old Kirby stories.
Because I was wondering whether Grenwell was just sort of saying, well, the Morlock tunnels are empty now after the Mutant Massacre. Have homeless people just taken over the Morlock tunnels?
Like, yeah,
that's what it was.
So this is the first appearance of Zero Town itself, but there's like an old cat villain. I think his name is Abner Doolittle from like 1976.
Okay,
his name is Brother Wonderful. That's what's picking up. Like, he's picking up some old Kirby weird character.
I just assumed he sort of said, "Oh, there's loads of tunnels under the." I mean, this now makes me worried. Was, you know, between the Mole Man, the Morlocks, and now Zero Town, New York is basically sitting on tunnels of nothing.
Well, and D-Man for Grunwald here is like, let's bring him back and use him as a plot device to bring in some other weird characters. But they also gave him some resolution, right?
Yeah.
I like that they brought him back from the dead. The brain damage thing's weird, but now he's the hero of Zero Town. And
he gets a nice sort of send-off, and, you know, he gets to, like I said, be the hero and have his own community.
Okay, there's all the setup. Now here's the stuff that we'll enjoy talking about more. Well, some of it. D-Man now becomes the homeless superhero that everyone makes fun of. So after Heroes Reborn, the Avengers title's been relaunched. This is one of my favorite comics of all time. Kurt Busiek, George Perez. And in their initial art, they could have done anything. But first issue, they bring in every character who has ever been an Avenger, because they have to fight Morgan Le Fay and Mordred the Mystic, who are using magic to like rewrite the world into like an old middle age version. And all the heroes are here. Do you want to talk about D-Man in the early Busiek Avengers?
I mean, when he's in the mansion, he is getting shat upon by pretty much everyone around him. There's the one scene where they're in the briefing room and he's sitting in the middle on his own and everyone is around, you know, there's spaces around him because they don't want to be around this smelly...
And Moondragon and Namor in particular are like,
"Oh, yes,
stink."
Shocking, it's those two. But I'd forgotten actually how much he uses him in the first like 3-4 issues.
He's
in Cap's team with some fairly A-level characters. Yeah.
They divide into teams. D-Man is written in this arc. He's not the main hero by any means, but there's like 70 characters running around, and he's written as like Cap's buddy who has a ton of heart. And he's like, you know, hey, I'm taking care of these people in Zero Town and I'm doing my best. But he's also got like, when he has to go into action, he busts out like some wrestler moves.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. He also has his standard costume with beard, but also like a cap and a jacket, like a snow hat. Like it's a fun thing.
It's a great look. And what I like about it is the fact that they don't kind of ignore the fact that he's still in Hero Town and actually he has responsibilities there. And he basically says, you know what? I don't want to be an Avenger. You know, he does this adventure with them and actually turns into a medieval version of himself, which looks great.
He's like in this little yellow hat. Everybody gets medieval versions of themselves. He's fun. And he's also shown as one of the characters in the Avengers that has the most heart, because at the end of this story, they have to draw upon the characters who have the most belief in heroism. And D-Man is one of the first to really step up, which is a lovely thing.
Yeah.
And then he's in Avengers Disassembled and he's in like JLA Avengers.
He's then the cameo queen at that point. He's got a great look. And you can, it's kind of like the armor and the pixie thing is you can put him in a background scene and you know exactly who it is because he's got a giant D on him with a beard.
it's the D-Man.
It's the D-Man.
Then we have like four arcs in a row that are escalating in weirdness. He's a weird... do you want to cover Pulse? Or do you want me to take that one?
You take that one.
Okay. Pulse is a series Brian Michael Bendis is writing that's all about like a newspaper covering superhero stuff. There's some fun stories in this. I picked up the series. It's Jessica Jones. There's some Green Goblin shit. Pulse 11 through 13, D-Man has gone mad, and he did previously have brain damage.
Mm-hmm.
He's schizophrenic. He has imagined someone called the Cosmic Grandmaster. It's just a delusion. Who has sent him forth to like rob places, but also commit acts of heroism. He steals some gems. He gets arrested. There's some newspaper stuff. Daredevil shows up. And then he's like in hiding for a while. And then he's randomly like working with a group of soldiers in Iraq in Marvel assistant sized special number one. He wins a pie eating contest. He applied to be the nanny of Danielle Cage in Bendis's New Avengers. Bendis keeps bringing him back as like a joke. Mm-hmm. Then we get the Revengers story, which is also Bendis. Did you read this one?
I did, and did not like.
Yeah, I hate it, actually. I love Bendis, but I hate this.
Yeah.
Bendis makes Wonder Man a pacifist.
Yeah.
And Wonder Man assembles a group of random heroes and attacks the Avengers because they think they're bad superheroes, so let's attack them. D-Man is still crazy. He's still got the Cosmic Grandmaster in his brain. And his teammates on the Revengers are Anti-Venom, Atlas, Captain Ultra, Century from Forceworks, Devil Slayer from the Defenders, Goliath, Virtue, who's like the superpowered Skrull. This is a weird fucking story. The Revengers, it's like a two-part annual. It's weird, weird, weird. And I hate his costume, and it's awful.
it just felt like it was just banging on with, let's just make D-Man even more just horrible. And it was kind of missing the point of the fact that he was a nice guy and he was being pulled in the wrong directions. And it was just, it just felt like it missed the point of the character completely.
He's schizophrenic and crazy. The fun part of the Revengers is it brings in a bunch of old fucking heroes that
you haven't
seen in a long time.
I always like Atlas as well.
Atlas is amazing, but he's weird with this team too. Atlas hates Wonder Man, first of all.
Yeah.
It's weird. The whole thing is weird. Okay, then it's 2011. We've got Cap Volume 6, 11 through 14, and this is Ed Brubaker. And D-Man is captured by Hydra, brainwashed, put in a black and white costume with a mask. It kind of looks like Crossbones costume. Mm-hmm. And he's made into the new Scourge with the fucking awful Henry Peter Gyrick in charge of him. Henry Peter Gyrick is the Rudy Giuliani of the Marvel Universe. He's terrible. And he's sent to murder people in witness protection, but he's not in control of his actions. Was this we were chatting about this. You were surprised to find out the D-Man.
I never read this before. I mean, I kind of checked out for a bit at that point anyway, but to read this was oh my good God. Cause I kind of sort of seen the bit in there in the chronology, sort of look at the Scourge. I think, obviously, I'll come to that at some point. I hadn't realized how long this went on for. And it was just nasty. It just felt nasty. And I just wanted to punch Guy Rick. I'm glad he's dead now. I have to be said, I was not, that bothered. Now I'm glad he's dead.
I Henry Peter Gyrick, I've already vowed, will get a trial on my show one day. He had a run in the Thunderbolts during under Kaseza, where he was weaponizing Nomad to be Scourge and sending him out to fight heroes. He was also the guy that was in charge of S.W.O.R.D., who was like rounding up aliens for deportation. And he's like, now he's ordering like villains or people he deems villains to be killed by this man he's brainwashed. Henry Peter Gyrick's a fucking bad guy.
And I hadn't realized how much play he gets outside of like the X office. And
he's mostly an Avengers character, nasty. Actually. Yeah, but he's terrible.
Yeah, and just what they do with Dennis to turn him into the Scourge. And I was reading this, it can't get any worse. Oh yeah, it gets worse, and then it gets even worse.
He kills some people, he kills a supervillain, he fights Diamondback and Porcupine, and then Cap gets involved. The best thing that happens to him here is that Sharon Carter kills him, and that's a beautiful thing that happened in this story.
Yeah, I mean, this is what, death number two, I think, at this point.
And this is kind of the new beginning for D-Man.
Yeah.
We get a weird story in a book called Secret Wars 2, T-O-O. I don't know even why this happens, but this little silly story by Kyle Starks is my favorite D-Man story ever. Do you want to talk to us about D-Man in, he's dead.
And he's then he dead.
Shows up in Secret Wars 2.
And he's, I don't even know who does the magic spell.
No, that's the point. You don't know
who. And it's just some random someone on, just before Battle World kicks in. So just before the end, the beginning of Secret Wars. And he runs a spell. And he's trying to raise a demon and mushmouths it. So he raises D-Man.
Do you remember in Harry Potter where he's like, Wingardium Leviosa? And she's like, no, it's Wingardium Leviosa. This man accidentally says D-Man instead of demon, and he brings D-Man back to life with a spell. It's fantastic.
And I love the fact that Dennis is like, oh, I guess I'm alive now then. Oh, well, fine. Pies. I know. I'll go and eat loads of pies.
He also seems to be better now. Like, his brain is better.
Yeah.
The spell restored him to life and made him better. He eats pies. He fights the Serpent Society. He goes to Avengers Mansion and Jarvis, who is amazing.
I loved Jarvis.
Jarvis tells him that he sincerely believes, like, he and Captain America were like, we think you are a great hero. He enters a wrestling competition with Rage.
This is the Sam Wilson series, isn't it?
No, it's before this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rage is in Sam Wilson too, but they're like wrestling buddies. And then Secret Wars, Secret Wars is the like culmination of the big Hickman event where the whole world gets turned into Battle World. And we get a weird page in this story where D-Man becomes Baron Dunphy of the Demolition House under the rule of Dr. Doom. And he just spends his time eating pies. Like, he's dead and all he wants is pie and wrestling and maybe some hero friends. That's all he wants.
And his costume is even more Wolverine at this point because it's now the brown and yellow.
But he's just owning it, you know?
And he's just like, you know what? But that page with Jarvis is just so lovely. And it was just Jarvis and him have these moments throughout the whole of his history where Jarvis just says, you know what? Actually, Steve does like you and you are a great guy, but I think you're not cut out to be a superhero. Find better things to do with your life and we will help you.
It's a great little nugget. We're going to launch into the next one quick. So Captain America Sam Wilson is all about the Falcon, who is now the Black Captain America. And it's a really surprisingly good series.
Yeah.
Nick Spencer is on the book. He's assembled kind of a supporting team or supporting cast for Sam Wilson. Among them is D-Man. And D-Man's kind of like the helper guy. He's wearing some new body armor. He looks great.
The costume is really cool. And I mean, yeah, all right. I know there were issues at the time with Nick Spencer and whatever. But actually, this is a really good comic. Because I was at that point just sort of like skimming through for all the D-Man content. And then I suddenly found myself reading this entire run because it was just good. And he's, like you say, he's part of this sort of support team. It's almost like the Birds of Prey. There's Misty Knight and D-Man, and they're just running around helping Captain America again. And this is his lot in life, to be the support module for Captain America, whichever
captain. To hang out with Misty Knight. He's like flying the ship. He's there. He fights the Serpent Solutions and the AmeriCops is like,
oh,
what,
yeah,
what the Republican Party wants to release in the streets of America at any time to police, you know, diversity. And then he finally comes out in like 2017 before Iceman, by the way.
Yeah.
This is, I said Secret Wars 2 was my favorite. This is my favorite D-Man story. It's Captain America, Sam Wilson, number 15. And it's a D-Man focused story. Tell us about this issue. It's wonderful.
So the team decides to have a bit of downtime and the new Falcon, which is, I want to say Javier, but it's not, is it? It's, I can't remember what his name is.
Joaquin Torres.
Joaquin, that's it. So Joaquin and Sam decide that the best way to do it is to go and watch some Unlimited Class wrestling because dudes. And it's... and Dennis and his boyfriend are there and Dennis is going to be doing essentially a reunion tour. and Battlestar's there.
He's fighting Battlestar on the national wrestling platform stage.
And I love it. And they get a chance to sort of rehash some of their issues. But actually, Battlestar says, I don't have an issue with you guys. You know, we fought when you were, when I was a new wrestler, and there was a heel turn, and that's what wrestling's all about. And I'm going to give you a comeback that you deserve, and he gets it. But what I notice is the boyfriend doesn't get a name here at all.
Correct. So there's a couple pages where he just, so I get this vision of like D-Man being painted as kind of like the aging celebrity who's revisiting what made him famous. Mm-hmm. And he has this kind of younger, hot little boyfriend who is so needy. He's like doting all over D-Man. Like, hey, honey, I'm here. Let me help you. I don't like this guy for D-Man.
No.
But he's revealed kind of quietly as queer here and being celebrated for it. It's so cute.
And there's no big, I am gay moment. And it's just, his boyfriend's there, and it's sort of, I'm here to support you and I love you, and go and kick their ass in the ring. And he does, and gets this great moment of redemption and to be what he wanted to be all the way back in Thing, which is a successful wrestler.
Now, I got the thrill of interviewing the hilarious Daniel Kibblesmith. We talked about his Lockjaw series. He gets a 4-issue series featuring Lockjaw, and he chooses his POV character to be D-Man. And D-Man's kind of this sad sack who he's just kind of laying around the house. He's lazy. He's a little depressed. There's a moment where his boyfriend leaves him. And this
I hope it's this guy because,
There's a direct quote. D-Man says, all I wanted was to be unconditionally loved while never having to work on my flaws. Is that so much to ask? And like,
I have never felt so attacked by a comic in my life. I mean, not only does this guy look like
sometimes.
Me, the guy looks like me and comes out with that. So just come for me directly, why don't you?
There's food hanging around the house that he forgets to clean up. He's living his best life.
In sweatpants, and he's got his D t-shirt, but it's got an exclamation mark now. And he's just a general schlub, and I love him in this.
He's watching TV, and the D-Man is the answer to a Jeopardy question. And the contestant's like, I don't know who D-Man is. So he punches the TV. He's like drinking beer and eating frozen pizza. Also, his powers are gone here. We don't quite know why.
The thing with D-Man seems to be is lots happen between the panels. And he's a character, a lot of characters, they disappear, they come back, and the status quo has not shifted for them for 15 years. Whereas for Dennis, things change, and it feels like he's having adventures and stories, and stuff is happening to him when he's not on panel for 5 years at a time.
His neighbor, Mrs. Gillespie, hears about his breakup, and she goes, oh, when you were such nice gays, too, not like those scary gays on the cable news.
It's such a great series.
He has a sister named Ruth who's just gone through a divorce. And then suddenly Lockjaw shows up on his front lawn. And then things get real weird. This is like jumping through dimensions. There's
Howard the Duck,
animals.
Spider Ham.
There's hamsters in alien ships attacking. The neighbor goes, what gay voodoo is this? With the hamsters attack. They go to the Savage Land, and D-Man meets up with Kesar standing over him in a loincloth. This is, again...
What's the line? I'm not dead, but I think I should be, or something.
He's gone to heaven. There's a blonde man in a loincloth.
This is it. I died. D is for dead. I thought, that I'm going to stand here, because Kesar had asked him, are you going to stand there staring all day? And it's like, yeah, pretty much. I would as well.
They go to the negative zone. D-Man gets changed into a dragon for a minute. This is a really fun series. And this is where D-Man should be all the time. He's a gay, lazy, like lovely, lovable, wonderful character who has a series of crazy adventures. But first we get Venomized.
Moving on.
Well, I'll cover this in like one sentence because it's just not worth it. So this is a series where there's an alien race called the Poisons who are taking heroes who have been possessed by symbiotes and then overriding the symbiotes and taking over their form to turn them into part of this hive mind. And this is relevant to the X-Men because time traveling Jean Grey from like the past, now in the present, gets killed by a poison. And then she has to rebuild her body out of like random, like cosmic matter. That's a thing that happened to teenage Jean Grey during this series. But D-Man and Rage get infected by poisons, and then they fight heroes, and then it's fine. He's fine. We see him at the thing's bachelor party. He's at a pride celebration. He teams up with Hawkeye. And then we get Ravencroft. There's another side.
Okay, so admittedly, I kept calling this Raventhorpe for months. I just couldn't keep the name in it. I read it for the first time because I'm not a great Marvel horror fan anyway. You know, it's not something I've really got into. And I actually really enjoyed this. It was better than I was expecting. And D-Man, again, has got another job, and he's now working as a security guard in an insane asylum.
And this is another story where he's the really nice guy who has a bunch of shit happen to him. Ravencroft is Marvel's Arkham Asylum. Yeah. This is Frank Thierry. He loves to write bad guys. Mm-hmm. Peepers is in this series. Go listen to my Peepers episode with Alicia Wilders for this story as well. But the criminals go violent, and they escape, and there's some weird dudes living under the place that are monsters. D-Man gets stabbed in the chest with a screwdriver by
Frank. And again, issue two. Oh, this is the day I die. So, oh, for God's sake, just stop dying. You're turning into Kenny. But I mean, the interesting thing was because Misty Knight's in this as well. And it's sort of, I can start to see a pattern now of who he follows.
Yep.
And he gets into all of these situations because he's following people he's had good experiences with. And it's not a good experience, but he gets out alive eventually, just. But it's an interesting thing. And Jaina, was it Jainus at the end? This big evil group that was announced at the end? It's a, this is set up for something big and is never mentioned ever again in any other comic.
It's kind of a dot, dot, dot. Ravencroft, it's an interesting series. D-Man's fine here. Yeah. But when you look at his narrative journey, some shit happened. That's all you need.
Exactly. This kind of fits before everything else has happened. It's an older story as far as
sometimes you just have to be like in things like Venomized, you just got to be happy that writers remember D-Man exists. Exactly. And it keeps us, they bring him back in once in a while.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
So. Then we get Marvel Voices Pride volume two, number one. There's a story by Grace Freud, who's coming on my show soon.
Oh, awesome.
I'm very excited. And D-Man has taken up the cause of being, okay, so I'm in Salt Lake City. There's a local house or charity that's been established for not just homeless youth, but LGBTQ youth. Like you can hang out after school. There's resources available. There's therapy. There's art groups. It's called the Encircle House. It's fantastic. And my kid hangs out there sometimes because I've got a gay teenager. In the Marvel Universe, this is called the Matt Baker House. Do you know who Matt Baker is?
No.
Matt Baker is an iconic artist who is Black and queer. And he's kind of a trendsetter in the comic book community. And he's a person of color who's a queer icon. So I love that he's a real person.
Oh,
I love
so that
they
cool.
named this the Matt Baker
House. Oh, that's brilliant.
And D-Man is the group leader for a new support group called Super Trans. And it's all these trans kids with different gender pronouns, different like setups. And they're really fun and they have ridiculous powers.
And fabulous names. And they're great. I want more of them.
And they get followed up on. There's a recent stint that Grace Freud wrote in X-Men Unlimited, the Infinity comic, mm-hmm. where D-Man and Jubilee and the super trans kids end up in Mojo World. And
yes.
Mojo's kid, Mojo Jr. 2, I think is his name, ends up part of the team. So there's a girl named Pity Girl. Her power is to hypnotize people by telling sad stories. There's a guy named Aphelion, who uses they, them pronouns, who's a person of color who has a whole universe inside him and like freezes people with us. There's Good Arson, who's a pyrokinetic. There's Face Shopper, who can shift into other people that she thinks are cool. It's a really fun, and then there's a couple more trans heroes who join. I love these characters, and I'm so happy to talk to Grace Freud about them soon. What were your thoughts on D-Man's portrayal as the group leader here?
I think it's a great place for him to be. It's, you know, he's he's had some shit thrown at him in his life, and you know what? He deserves to have a happy time and to just sort of say to these kids, you know what? Sometimes we need to talk things through, and you know, let's be honest, the guy's needed some serious therapy for a while. So to see him actually do something positive and fun and just be a big gay dad is kind of awesome.
Spider-Man's there. The female super team, the Syndicate Attack, featuring White Rabbit. Go see my episode on White Rabbit with Sarah Century and Daryl Lawrence, which is so fun. D-Man gets called a bear for the first and only time in comics. He also gets to yell his battle cry here, which is muscles rock.
So stupid, but brilliant.
It's delicious.
But he's wearing the old costume again, because I suppose it's easier to put spandex under a plaid shirt than it is to put body armor.
Marvel has a number of queer characters at this point. They number in the several dozen, and D-Man is one of them. And I love that he gets used here in a way. Did you ever read the Patsy Walker, aka Hellcat series?
No.
There's a young gay inhuman kid. He's a little twinkie kid named Telekinian who ends up in a relationship with one of Patsy's old like friends from her comics that ran in like the 50s.
Oh, wow.
His name is Tubbs. And he is revealed to be gay, and he's now in this relationship with this little Telekinian. And Tubbs gives me like D-Man energy. What I'm getting at is there's a number of queer characters out there, but if you look for them, they're all over. I love that even like the gay elder role now.
Yeah.
As we're kind of wrapping up our conversation, what are your thoughts on D-Man's journey? If we take his kind of narrative arc from beginning to end, what are your thoughts on this guy?
I hadn't realized quite how much shit this guy had gone through or how many times he died. He's reaching Jean Grey levels at this point. And he's the fact that he's in such a nice, happy place at this point, given everything he's gone through, I think is a real nice pleasure to be, or pleasure to read, because normally characters like this become dark and grim and gritty and angry, and you know, they're wandering around with more guns and armor, and he's not. He's running a support group and he's being the big gay dad, and it's just so affirming that actually not everything has to be about grief.
Yeah, if I take his whole narrative arc, my favorite version of D-Man is the modern one.
Yeah.
He's the support group leader, he's gay, he's out. He's got some money, but maybe he takes a job sometimes. He's got a boyfriend or two, but like can't keep a relationship. And you know, occasionally he runs into action. My second favorite version of him is the sidekick version.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Wilson or Steve Rogers, he's on the side, he's living his best life because he doesn't want to be in the spotlight, but he's happy to help. And I don't think he wants to be in the action very much. No.
I can see him as kind of like that secondary role in Heroes for Hire, that if they need an extra bit of muscle, they'll call him in, or if they just need someone to drive for them, he'll do it because he's a nice guy and he'll be Misty Knight's Uber driver for a night.
I find myself like tremendously fond of this character. What's the worst version of D-Man out there?
Honestly, it's a combination between Scourge, because that's just a horrible... I think that whole...
You mean when the Republican government brainwashed a queer man into committing murders for them? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, they're just a little minor problem, you know. And I think that's probably the worst... You know, that whole era where they were just... You know, I hate to say the Bendis era, but basically when Bendis got hold of him and turned him...
The Revenger story is worse than the Scourge story. Yeah.
You know, Pulse, basically from Pulse, basically through to Venomized, he's just gets shit thrown at him all the time.
He gets choked out by his own evil Magus created version. He gets stuck in an iceberg. There's heart attacks. But I like him hanging out with the Thing. I like him hanging out with the super trans group. I like him. He's friends with Jubilee now and Escapade and Morgan Red. And like, this is an X character on a supplementary level, because he's the mentor for the super trans group.
And he needs to meet Jumbo Carnation.
Yes, that would actually be fantastic. Although I think D-Man's type is like younger, twinky white guys who like are really into like a daddy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the D-Man story that you want to see?
I want to see more of him actually just being that group leader for Supertrans, to, you know, let them develop themselves as, you know, almost like the Oracle to a group of teens, to, you know, be there as the support, to send them out on missions and be there when things go wrong and help them out.
I don't need him necessarily in the feature role. I'm happy with him in the support role, as long as he's used well and used often. I really like him. He's a great character.
Just become the cameo queen that he deserves to be.
What a delight, Christian. This has been so fun to just kind of hang out. Yes. I hope it was fun for you to research this guy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Definitely been fun to talk about him. I think we've given more thought to D-Man than most of the writers who have written D-Man have given thought to him. But he's really fun. Go read Captain America Sam Wilson 15 if you want one single D-Man story. But also look at him in that Marvel Voices Pride issue we talked about. Yeah. Lockjaw's also a really fun series. He's great though. And then if you want to go over to the appendix, the Marvel Universe appendix, I have a whole profile written up on this guy. Queer icon Dennis Dunphy. lovely. Thanks for hanging out with me today, Christian. We're gonna put this out on the last Wednesday in September. Where can people find you online? Is there anything you want to plug, my friend?
Nothing that I can think of to plug. I mean, you know, just join the Patreon if you've not joined it, and you know, you're hearing this 3 months later, but just join it because it's well worth it. But no, I've got nothing in it. I'm not creative like that. You know, you have these fabulous creative people who've got things to plug and share, and yeah, no, I don't have that. But if anyone does want to follow
hanging
me,
hanging out with nerds, you're my favorite.
Oh, bless. But yeah, if anyone does want to follow me, I'm on all the various platforms as ChrisE1701. And you can follow me for, you know, Star Trek and comics and bears and general thirst as well.
Fabulous, my friend. I hope we get to meet in person one day. If you ever
do
America, I don't know. My kids are getting older, so international travel is a little easier, but I would love to come to London. We'll hang out sometime in person.
Definitely.
Amazing.
Definitely.
Okay, I kind of announced on my show, we've got the Smut episode featuring Candy Southern right after this, and I have to put like major disclaimers because we use language and content. It's really fun, and you're gonna laugh, but you will also be gobsmacked with the shit we talk about in that episode. I love Candy Southern. Candy, if you're unaware, Candy was named by Roy Thomas after a famous book called Candy, written by Terry Southern, which is a famous smut book. And I had a group read it, and it's Arturo Rojas and Sarah Century and Justin and Alicia Wilder. And I think I'm forgetting someone because it's early on Sunday morning, and my apologies in advance.
I think Demanda?
Oh yeah, Demanda Martini's there too. And we get to say phrases like, there's a character named Aunt Liv who says, get me out of these wet panties and into a dry martini. Like, we get to read a lot of one-liners like that.
Oh my God.
Then we're following that up with, I get to interview JM Day Mateus on the main show about his new Magneto series.
Oh.
And then that's immediately followed by a review of Magneto Testament, during which, I'm not joking, I openly weeped for an hour and a half. I've only cried on my show once before, and it was for a few minutes with Regina Givens on my episode about the McCoys. Because we're talking about moms and their kids, and I got sad. This episode, I'm openly crying. All four of us on the show, Philip C.V., Christy Porter, Gabriella Garbero, and I were like on camera just like sobbing the whole episode. It's so sad. Magneto's a rough ride, man. But October is an all Magneto month, which means the next Patreon episode coming out after this is the crazy character, Astra. with Jamie Faye and Anya Prosser. We'll get there. She's crazy. So be ready for a lot of delicious content upcoming, and it's a whole new show starting in November again. So thanks everybody for your ongoing support. I hope you're having fun. All right. Thank you, D-Man, and thank you, Christian. We will see you guys back here next time on Grey Vulcan Lane's Patreon.